Good morning. So today we're going to learn, good morning Melanie, good morning. We're going to learn in honor of a refuah for Reuven ben Cerna Rosa. Cerna Rosa, a refuah shalema. Yes, that's what our learning is. Should be okay. Reuven, that's a man. Related to somebody, so should be a refuah shalema. Well, good morning, everybody. Oh, Melanie, you're sitting there, and you have all the extras over here. No problem.
No, you can take one of each. It's all good.
Okay, well, we are back. And when, as Rona says, we need revision, but when we finished a long time ago, when we finished the term last term, we were doing a mitzvah of loaning money to the poor. As we've mentioned with Parshas Mishpatim, it's a very interesting parsha in the sense where there are many, many, many mitzvahs, and the mitzvahs sort of jump one to the next, to the next, to the next, and it could be one pasuk and it could have one mitzvah that there's a lot on. There are many times when you have a mitzvah that has only two psukim, so there's lots of topics. So in a way that's good, because then if we miss a lesson, you know, you're never too much to catch up in a sense, because it's sort of its own mitzvah, even though there are obviously connections and there are things that we refer back to. But today we are moving on from loaning money and we are going to a whole different thing. There's a few mitzvahs that we're going to do today. Let's start with the first one. So on the pages that have the Chumash, thank you so much, that says 292. I know there's so many booklets, but the one which is actually the Chumash in front of you, because I first want to read the Pasuk and then we'll read the Rashi and then we'll see. Yeah, exactly, Rona. That's the one. Yes, yes. Okay, so the Pasuk tells us, Elohim, this is Pasuk Chav Zayin, verse 27, Elohim loy sekalel. In English, they translate, you shall not curse a judge. Elohim, when we read the word Elohim, we don't think of judge. What's a judge in Hebrew? Shofet, right? Exactly, Shoftim. It doesn't say Shofet, it says Elohim. This is not the only time in Chumash that that word is used. We do have sometimes that the judge is called Elohim. It's from the word of a master, so to speak, somebody like somebody who is in charge to make sure that things are running properly. But we'll see why they are using this word. But just on a very simple level, it means you don't curse a judge. Who else? V'nosi ba'amcha loy sa'ar, and a nosi, again, also an interesting word. Over here they translate a leader, so an appointed leader amongst your nation. Also, you shall not curse. Okay, very interesting mitzvah here. It's an admonition, obviously. It's something to make us, to warn us. Boy, oh boy, big time. It's incredible, actually. Nothing is new. It's true. Ein chadash tachas Hashemesh. That's what it says. It is 100% true. Good morning, Lisa. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Yes. So you're right. Nothing has changed. And we'll see soon. So first, let's understand what this pasuk is. And the next pasuk is a whole different mitzvah. So we're going to stop here for a minute. And let's first look into Rashi. Rashi says, if you look on the bottom, you know, the middle part, Elohim lo yisekalel. So he says, you shall not curse a judge. So he says, Harei zoy azhara lebirkas Hashem. This, according to Rashi, is a prohibition against cursing the name of Hashem. Oh, so Rashi doesn't just say judge. He says also God. You can't curse the name of God. And also, v'azhara leklalas dayin. So it has two meanings. It incorporates both meanings. It also means you shouldn't curse a judge. Okay, so both, according to Rashi. And I just want to see, I think, let me just see something. If there was anything on the bottom. No. Okay, now, if you, I'm sorry to be confusing, but you have one piece that has a double-sided in front of you. And that's what I'd like you to look at now. The one that looks like this. Looks like this, you see, it has double-sided. So look at this sheet, and it has numbers. So the number one, Do you see it has number one? I want to show you, because here we'll see a little bit more what is going on over here. So he says, Loisik Halel, first of all, the Ibn Ezra tells us, Haim Hadayonim, we're referring to judges. But he says, not only does it incorporate Hashem, but he says it also incorporates Vehaim HaKoyhanim Bnei Levi She'imohem HaTaira. So this is an interesting category. In this context, he specifically highlights Kohanim, that Kohanim should not be cursed. And why? What's special about the Kohanim? They are the children, they are from the tribe of Levi, who actually have a special connection to Torah. We know that actually Leviim were the teachers of Torah, and the Kohanim were even, so to speak, the holiest part of the Shevet. So here we see something interesting. These are not just judges, these are spiritual leaders. You see what he's adding, that slant. So the word Elohim is God, the judges, and also spiritual leaders, people who impart Torah. Then he says in the next part, look what he says, V'nosi ba'amcha loisar, so you shouldn't curse the Nasi. So he says, B'seiser, this is very interesting because he uses two words, Kalel and Ta'ar. Both of them mean curse. But he says something interesting. We have to be careful. Sometimes we might think this means that you can't say a curse in front of other people. But if you're in private and you're angry in your own room and they judged something that you didn't like, what's the difference what I say? No. Privately or publicly, you cannot curse, not the judge, not the leader, not God, not the spiritual leader, whoever it is. V'haga'aynim hifrishu bein klala umara. And the ga'aynim, right, they were sages just after the time of the Gemara, and they made a separation. They said that there is a little bit of a difference between the word klala and ma'ara. V'ze hanasi hu hamelech hakosuv b'mishnah Torah. So he says a very interesting thing, that who is the nasi? What nasi? What is a nasi? Does it mean any leader of any community? So he says it actually specifically refers to the king. A king who was like identified, as we know, in Chumash and in the Rambam, right? We have a specific, you know, king that's anointed, and that's fits into this category. There might be other derivatives, but they are not necessarily directly biblical. So he says, if you curse a king, that's directly. So when we look at the flow of the psukim, you know, the one that comes one right after the other, and we'll see that Hashem says to us, there's a bunch of mitzvahs that come up until there, where Hashem says, everything I tell you, you should watch. We find many mitzvahs that have to do with poor people. We'll see. We already mentioned about loaning to the poor. We'll see soon it talks about miser and all different things that have to do with giving to the poor. What's the connection between giving to the poor and this concept of cursing a judge? So let's see what he says. Okay. Ki'ilu heim dvukim in parshasim kesef talvets, as if they are connected and like literally one with the parsha, which is the topic of if you will loan money. So omer yifas tam. So we can say a very, very good reason, a beautiful reason, lahaskir elekim loisikala. Why does it mention over here that you shouldn't curse the judge? So because ulai ha'ani, maybe the poor person, bereif tzarai, in his tremendous pain, balayla, at night, im yavar hamalve, v'lo yoshiv loy ha'avot. Do you remember what we said? That if the person gave you his pajamas to hold on, right? You have to give it back at night. Now what happens if you don't give it back at night? You hold on to it because you feel justified. He hasn't repaid his loan. So you don't give him back his pajamas. So what's going to happen? He's going to be freezing at night and very uncomfortable. So what will he do? Yekalel es hadayin shedon sheyukach avutoy. That will lead that this poor person will curse the judge that said that he should give away his pajamas because he's not able to pay back the loan. So it's a very interesting thing if you follow, fascinating. In our way of thinking, in our Western way of thinking, we usually make a bit of a separation and we say, he's guilty, so whatever he does is not our responsibility. Here Torah says no. Even though he's guilty, he owes you money. Nevertheless, if he ends up cursing the judge on account of something that you are doing, that you shouldn't be doing, you have to take full responsibility. So you take responsibility, and it's also you who are causing him tremendous pain and causing him to act in such a terrible way. So very interesting how everything, one thing has an effect on the other. Very powerful. Okay, that's what Ebenezer says. Turn the page. So I want to show you something a little bit more, number three. This is in the middle of a Ramban, so it's on the second side, and he says like this: when you talk about not cursing the Nasi, the leader, here he says, Hizir al Hamelech Elyon Yisbarech v'al Hamelech Ba'aretz. So the Ramban says it's connected. It makes a lot of sense. It's warning us not to curse God who rules over the whole world. He's the higher ruler, and of course we shouldn't curse the king, and the judges would also fail, but here we're talking about a king who's running the physical world, right? He's in charge of ensuring that everything runs properly down here. V'heim amru b'gemara. So this is, they said in the Gemara, ki yikanes b'chlal aleikim Hashem hanichbad v'hashayfet asher yoshav mushav aleikim ba'aretz. So he says, what's included over here, first of all, obviously, is Hashem, the glory, you know, Hashem himself, and the judge who sits down here and gives judgments on the earth. So he says, this only one that's not so clear is, what is the Nasi? So is the Nasi referring to a king or a political leader, or is it referring to the heads of the Sanhedrin, the spiritual leaders? So it's not so clear. According to the Rambam, this, if you curse the Sanhedrin, it is included in this warning. So therefore, you would be just as you would be considered just as guilty if you did that. So obviously, you're never allowed to curse anybody. But this just gives an extra, you know, severity to it. That's the idea over here. Okay. Let me just see. Any prince, we're talking about anybody who's in any leadership position. And he says, for sure, when you're in a spiritual leadership position, that's even more important. So obviously, that person should be treated with the proper respect. Okay. Now, let's see number four. Svarnu. What does the Svarnu say? Lois sekalel. Afal pisha tachshev shahata hadayin estinecha. So he goes into your mind. What would cause you to curse the judge? Because not usually you don't curse the judge when he judges against you if you realize you're guilty. But you feel you're innocent. He's judging incorrectly. For some reason, he sees the story wrong. So he says, when you think that he's perverting the justice, then that's what will cause you to judge. So he says, even in that case, do not curse him. She'ein adam roye chayva la'atzmai. And this is, again, a very powerful thing. This is for us to take a step back and say, even though it looks to me black and white that I was not guilty, I was innocent, the other party was guilty, he totally judged the wrong way, you should know that because it's about you, it's impossible for you to be objective. That's what the Svarnu says. So you should take a step back, and in your mind, you should somehow accept that maybe the judge is correct, even if it looks black and white to you that he's incorrect. So this is fascinating, because what this means is, if you think about it, that the Torah is actually telling us how to think. When we leave the court, we can't just say, you know how children sometimes, you know, when you tell them to do something and they feel, or you accuse them of something and they feel that they are right. Says, okay, I'll do it because you said so, you know, not because I agree. You don't know what you're talking about, I'll do it. No, the Torah says to us, this is not the way we have to be. We have to understand that once the judge has decided, that is inspired by Hashem, and we have to accept it in a way where we have to take responsibility, even if we find it difficult to understand. It's quite a powerful thing. And that, in that way, even inside, we won't be cursing the judge. That's the idea of it. So it's a real deep acceptance of whatever it is that he decided.
So,
okay.
So in the suspect, is there a means of appeal if there isn't a
second? Ooh, that's a good question. I'm not sure. It's fascinating how they come to any kind of it's a very grueling process, to be honest, to get to something. I don't think that there is an appeal system, but to come to a verdict is so difficult, that, and there's so much that you would hope that it's correct. And we also believe, as we say, Elokim nitzav ba'atas kel, that God is present amongst the courts. So that's that, really, yeah. Okay, let's see what the Rav Shamshon... Unfortunately, they're not, but... Yeah, and now, and that's right. Okay, let's see what Rav Shamshon Felher, so he says, Loi, this is number five, Loi sekalel, la'achel loi, what does it mean? He actually explains, what does it mean you're going to curse him? That you shouldn't wish upon him, sheyoivad erkoi. This is interesting, that he should lose his value, in other words, his respect. We're not talking about just cursing him that something bad should happen to him, because we would think, okay, so we're such good people, we don't wish it upon him, chas v'shalom, anything bad. But what we wish is that people should see that he's not such a good judge. No, that's also in this category. That's not acceptable. So it's quite a fascinating thing. Arar hu la'achel ivadin. So he said, like, cursing means to wish somebody to lose something, to wish destruction. And this is also a form of destruction. And bidayan mafriya lai etzem hamishra hazais. What matters to the judge? His whole identity. I'm a judge. So if people will not consider me as a good judge, to him, that's the worst blow possible. Ubinasi hu mekaneh ba'ashrei. And so, unfortunately, sometimes with a leader, it's the wealth. Okay, this is an interesting thing. As we know, when we're talking about political leaders, there's a lot about their status as far as financial status, and that they're, so if you wish upon him, he should lose his money, or he should lose his political clout, or whatever it may be. And that's when we're talking about cursing, that's what it means. And this is something, again, very interesting, it's very subtle, because we would think, no, we're not such bad people, we don't curse anybody. But sometimes we want certain things to happen to certain people, and here he's explaining how careful we have to be with that. Number six, just a one line, he says, Lo sekalel. So he says, interesting thing, b'mashmaos lo sekalel, nichlal lashon bizayin. What's included in cursing? Just shaming, embarrassing, making somebody less than what they are. So again, to put it in context, what we mean by this mitzvah, it's not such an easy mitzvah in that sense, because we would all think, no, none of us do it. But when we analyze it, we realize that subtly sometimes we might fall a little bit into that. Okay, I want to just show you on the other sheets that you have. Now the other booklet, the third booklet, that has just numbers on the page. So I just wanted to show you something very beautiful that we always look at the Sefer HaChinuch. So the Sefer HaChinuch tells us something very beautiful. I was thinking we should do it separately, but each mitzvah is its own, so we will stop and look here. So the Sefer HaChinuch, as we know, is incredible, and he discusses this mitzvah in a very beautiful way. He tells us also a general principle. Sure. Okay, so that's a good question. In the mitzvah midairaisa, yeah. Would it be also generally government? So in Pirkei Avos, we have a concept that we shouldn't wish upon for the destruction of the government, because then people will swallow each other. So as a derivative, we do learn that we do have to have respect for any, so to speak, measure of somebody who's running, trying to make things run well, any political leader or a judge or a policeman or anybody who's trying to enforce law and order. Would it be a biblical command? Might not. And a lot of these mitzvahs really are only referring when the Jews are in Eretz Yisrael and have their own, their system, that's right. But still, it would extend for sure, if not biblically, rabbinically, and then, yeah, definitely. So
we have a stumbling block in front of the person moving. Yeah. But if they're wrong in the end, what can that person who's been accused badly do?
Yes, so that's what we were saying before. So if it's in Torah, we have to just accept that was Hashem's will.
Oh.
Yeah, somehow or other. And it wasn't wrong because it wouldn't have been wrong if that's what came out at the end, if they did it properly. No, but we'll see, Daisy. You're asking a good question, because we're going to see soon. We're going to discuss a little bit more, because we're only human beings, and there were times, even in Israel, that they were flawed and that people weren't so good, and let's see what happens there. So we'll see. It's That's a good question, and we'll come to it soon. I just want to see here, it says something very, I'm going to read some of this in English and then some in Hebrew. On page one, first we'll start in the English. He says a very interesting, a general principle, which is fascinating concept in Bechlal and Torah. So he says like this. Here we have the concept of not to curse judges, right? That's what this mitzvah, you see 69, it says, not to curse judges. This is the 69th mitzvah in the Torah. For it is stated, you shall not curse Elohim, which means judges, right? As in the verse, he whom Elohim shall condemn. So we know that Elohim is referring to a judge. But here he says, when we, the Chumash we know, however, use the expression of Elohim, which also means God, so that another prohibition would be included under this negative precept. And what is that? That is the ban against blasphemy. So you cannot curse Hashem of the divine name, as our sages of blessed memory stated in the Midrashim, Mechilta, and Sifra. And we have a solemn warning against blasphemy. Now the truth is that so I'll just read here. So he says, of the divine name, since it is written, you shall not curse Hashem. That which is written elsewhere, he who blasphemes the name of Hashem shall surely be put to death, right? In a different place it says that. Over there it has something extra, a punishment. Here, there is no punishment. You see, it's very, very specific, very important thing here we're saying. No punishment, just a warning, a prohibition. Don't do it. Stay away from it. So the Sefer HaChinuch tells us that this is a very exact thing that the Torah wants, to have one place where we have a warning and one place where we have the warning with the punishment. Why? Why is it important to tell us that we shouldn't do something and not tell us the punishment immediately? It's a very important principle in the way we view, a philosophical principle in the way we view Torah. And this is a very, very beautiful thing, so I'll show you. Look at the second paragraph. The reason for it is that if no deterring caution by Hashem were given us about something, but he merely told us, anyone who does this and this will be punished this and this. Let's just say everything has would be like that. Like you know, sometimes if you go, I don't know, if a law usually is that way, you know, you say if you don't pay this fine, then you'll be given a bigger fine, right? That's, you know, how it is. What does that lead you to think? And what is the approach, what is the attitude that we have towards that thing that we are told not to do? So he says a very beautiful thing. He says, it would imply that anyone who so wishes has the right to take the punishment, not caring about his pain, in order to violate the precept. And by this, he will not go against the wishes of the eternal Lord and his commandment. It means if a person decides, like it says, let's say it says, enter at your own risk. You know how they say sometimes, a person says, okay, I want to take the risk. I choose to. It says if you're going to drive 100 miles an hour, you're going to crash. So I choose to crash. I want to. So you have the right. You might think if every time it said a warning together with the punishment, you would think that you have a right to choose. I'll choose. I'll do it. I don't mind getting the punishment. The Torah doesn't want us to view mitzvahs that way. That's not what it's all about. It's not that we withhold ourselves from doing something because Hashem told us we are going to get punished and because the punishment does follow. Why do we stop ourselves from doing so? Just because Hashem doesn't want us to do it. Punishment or no punishment. This is a very important thing because what it means is, and this is something also that sometimes we do subtly, there's no tit for tat. We can't say to Hashem, all right, today, like, you know, you make like bargaining, you know, you'll say, today I won't daven, I won't learn. It's okay, so I'll have an empty day. Today is my day off, my day out. It doesn't work like that. That's not what it's about. It's not about that I'll choose. It's not your choice to choose, so to speak, out. There's no out. You are obligated to do because you're obligated to do, and you have to do it just for that, or not do it just for that. And then besides that, there's also punishments, and we know that's because one of the reasons is that's given. First of all, sometimes it's just a consequence, and sometimes that helps us as people, because unfortunately, as human beings, sometimes we do need a punishment to deter us. We know that's just how we are, but we should remember that we don't have the choice. Okay, that's a very important, that's why it even serves to repeat something as long without the punishment. Okay, now I just want to show you, go to the bottom actually go and I'm the other side in the Hebrew. I want to show you because it's a very beautiful word. Let's see what he says. Mishor sheha mitzvah. Now let's understand what's this mitzvah all about that we shouldn't curse the judge. So he says lahasir me'al hadayonin yiras hanidun, and this is a very important thing, to remove from the judge the fear over the ones he is judging. So he shouldn't be afraid of the people that he is judging, the kilolosai and their curses, kidei sheyetziu hadin la'amitai, so that he should be able to judge properly. This is interesting because this is not about the person, this is about the judge. If we are permitted to curse the judge after we don't like his judgment, well, the judge will be petrified when he's judging. He might actually withhold from the harshness of the judgment, even if he believes it should be, because he doesn't want to be cursed. And let's see, he goes even further. This is also warned in another place in the Torah. There's another benefit. What's another benefit? So on page 2 on the top, what does he say? He says, if you curse the judge, like wish him many, many misfortunes, many terrible things. Why? Why would you do that? And as he says, ki hamein ha'am b'sichlusam, because the general people, you know, the masses, in their stupidity, sainim aysay, they hate him. You know, as soon as he judges against them, right away, you hate him. Ve'im la yuzharu al kilalasay, and if we're not warned not to curse him, ula yikaleluhu v'yis ayuru mitoich kach lakum olav. This is fascinating because now in law there's so much discussion. This we would call incitement. What will happen if you start to curse him? And then what's going to happen is then you start talking how bad that judge is, and to your friends, and all, well, everybody's going to come and say, oh, this judge is so bad, and they'll all gather, and who knows what follows from that. The verbal incitement, as we know, can lead to actual physical harm. We know that now, we know that we've seen that many, many times, and there's a lot, as we know, a lot of discussion about the effects and the terrible effects, but here from here we see, fascinating how careful we have to be with our attitude and how we speak about whatever's all these different forms of leadership. Be careful that you shouldn't say, Yasu, because as soon as they speak, it leads to action. V'yiyeh bazeh ra rabba, and it will lead to terrible, absolutely terrible things that will happen. Kihu b'mishpat yamid aretz, because as he says, he establishes the land by justice. And if there's no justice, the land won't continue to. This we see now, we see it constantly. This is very interesting. So many times people ask, does Torah believe in free speech? Actually not. To be honest, no. We are so limited in what we are permitted to speak. That's really the truth, to be honest. Very interesting. There's no free speech. Free. Okay. Definitely not in this case. Okay. One of our values, as we say, but we see all the terrible, yeah. Okay, let's see now. I want to just go now to this is actually interesting because he divides it into a few things. So let's look at the bottom. It's still the same mitzvah. Ayin is 70. Umishar sheha mitzvah bebirkas Hashem. Also the root of the mitzvah, like, because we said about, they use the word birkas because they don't want to say the opposite, but it means not blessing Hashem, means exactly the opposite. Why? And this is also beautiful, beautiful words in Hebrew. Look on the bottom of page 2. What will happen to a person when they say negative things about Hashem? Lefisha misroikein ha'adam b'maymer harahahu. The person becomes literally empty when he utters these bad things. Mikol ha'tayva, from all good. In other words, he becomes a very empty person, a very shallow, a very, actually a negative person. V'chol hoid nafshoi nehepach l'mashchis. And it's a very beautiful language. Hoid nafshoi, the glory, so to speak, the beauty, the splendor of his soul becomes literally transformed to the opposite, to destruction. V'hinei hu nechshav kabehemes, he's considered like an animal. Ki be'oisei dover mamish. Why? Because with that exact thing, shehevdiloi Hashem yisparech l'toiva, that which Hashem has given us, which separates us from other creations, in for good, which is speech, this is our gift that Hashem has given us, ubaynas adam, and with that we have become a human being. The hu hadibur, that speech, shenivdal, page number 3, by mimine abeimis, that's what separates us from all kinds of animals. What does he do with that gift of speech? As we're talking about, do we have free speech? What does he do? He takes this incredible gift, mavdil hu es atzmai lara, instead of separating himself for good, elevating himself, he makes himself lower. He separates himself for bad. He removes himself from any form of understanding, any form of wisdom, any form of logic. Vinase kisheretz, very strong language. Kisheretz nimas vinelach v'lamata mimenu. He becomes literally like a, whatever, a very disgusting, creepy, crawly creature, you know, even lower than it. Because he's using that which is the greatest gift for something so low. The alkein his harsanu, sorry, his hirasan, he's here, sorry, his hirasnu, hatayra. So the Torah has warned us, alzeh, ki akel hatayv yachbeitz v'tayvaseinu. Again, this is a very, you know, common theme. What does God, who is good, want? He wants our good, our benefit. In other words, he wants us to be elevated. He wants us to be special, fulfill our potential as incredible human beings. The chol dibur v'dibur, and every speech hagoyer menias hatayva, which causes a negative, a holding back of good, mimenu yavai kenegdai cheftzai baruchu, kenegdai, anything which will bring something against the will of Hashem, and that is exactly the opposite of the tremendous gift which Hashem has given us. So again, very interesting perspective. When we talk about speech is an incredible gift. It's a gift, it's not something that we're entitled to, it's something that we've been gifted with, and that's a different way of looking at it. And if we've been gifted it, we have to use it properly, the way the person who has given us the gift, not the person, Hashem, who has given us the gift, has told us to use it. Otherwise, we abuse it, we misuse it, and we become the lowest of the low. And if we think about it logically, if we take this gift of speech and we use it improperly, it would be like when you get, I don't know, any special gift from somebody else coming with the manual and you say, I know better. You know better, and then we know what happens when we know better. It doesn't work afterwards, and this is the idea. So it causes absolute destruction. And that's what the Sefer HaKhanuch tells us, why this is such an important, important thing. I wanted to show you one more, and then we're going to move on to the next mitzvah. Page number 4. Let's look in the middle of page number 4. Mishorsha, again. So it's talking here about cursing the leader, the political. I'm talking about how it's so applicable now. This is like it could be written for today, in the newspapers today. Mishor sheha mitzvah lefi she'i efshar lishuv b'nei adam. It's impossible to have a settled community. In other words, a society which functions properly. It's impossible. Mibli she'yasu echad mibeinehem roish al ha'achirim. You cannot, communism, socialism doesn't work. You cannot have a society that doesn't have one person that's, if you can elect him, it's not a problem. But after you've elected him, you have to respect him, and he has to have certain powers of decision. Now, what happens once? So he says, La'asayis mitzvah, and we have to do what he commands, u'lekayim gzei reisav, and keep his decrees. Mipnei shedeyais b'nei adam chalukim zemizeh, human nature, we all hold differently. We have our own opinions. None of us see the same. None of us see eye to eye, right? We just think differently. As he says, Zemize, V'lo yaskimu kulam la'ilam, we'll never all agree, that's for sure. Ladas achas to one way. La'asayis davar mikol advarim, to do something. And what will happen then? Umitoich kach, yetze mi b'neim habitul v'asifa b'pe'ulais. So if there's not one leader, what's going to happen is everything will come to a standstill. Nothing will work. Nothing will ever be implemented because everybody will just have their own opinion. So nothing will ever go. That's how it is. And we see, unfortunately, in the very corrupt countries like in Africa, we see there where it doesn't work. They can't. You can't possibly. Okay, that's where the leader is abusing his power. That's the other extreme. And yet, with us as well, I mean, in the U.S. you see now and everywhere, if you don't have a leader that, even after you've elected, that you will respect what they say, it leads to the biggest anarchy. That's how we see. And it's just, society crumbles. Nothing can work. Nothing can function. So we have to accept the opinion of one of them. Im toiv, look what he says, v'im ra, whether it be good or bad. So this is an interesting one. This is a very interesting view that us born in, it's hard for us being born in the Western society and being, you know, empowered and having our own view and, you know, and we then standing up for justice, but you know, it's too bad. Sometimes it's just too bad and you just have to ride it out, so to speak. We're not talking of somebody, obviously, some Torah has its own, this person has to also accept God's will. Do you understand? That's the you know, the given in a sense. So there is a higher power above that person as well. So if a person, like we say, if a leader abuses his power, obviously we're not supposed to be listening and we're not supposed to leave him in power. But we're talking about whether he makes the road 10 feet wide or 5 feet wide, right? Like the things that Hashem didn't dictate and we just don't like it, right? He says the stores close at 5 and we want the stores to be open at 6. You understand? This is the kind of thing that we have to be very, very careful. And this, as we see in the political, nowadays, it's become so, a lot of the societies become so frozen, so impossible for them to move on. And not only frozen, but I don't know, for me, so much money is wasted, so much time, and so many important things are not attended to because of that. And that's a very sad thing to see. But anyways, as we can see, this is how the Torah's view. That's, he says, leman yatzlichu, so that they should succeed, v'yasku ba'iska shalaylam, that they should be able to involve themselves in the involvement of the world, in other words, the running of the world, as Hashem made it. Pam yimotzei batzosei v'cheftzei teiles rav, upam heipech, sometimes you'll find in what this leader does good, and sometimes it will be the opposite. V'chol zetoy, but he says a very important line, v'chol zetoyv min hamachleikes, it's still better than divisiveness, shegoyrim bitul gomer, because that causes an absolute standstill, freeze. Nothing happens. It's like as if it could mamish be written for today. The Sefer HaChinuch is almost 1,000 years old, and in 1200s, unbelievable. And in those times, they didn't even have democracy or anything, but yeah, quite an incredible, this is the Torah, that's what it is. The Torah is, as we know, really eternal. Okay, so let's see now, we'll go to the next mitzvah. Okay, so even this mitzvah alone, which seems like such a small thing, and it has so many, I know, it's incredible. It's quite a powerful thing. Okay, let's see now, going back to the Chumash, let's see the next mitzvah. The next mitzvah, its own little mitzvah in the middle of nowhere, it seems. And let me just see. Yeah, well, I think it's two psukim we'll read together. So this is Pasuk Chav Ches. So he says, Melei oscha vidim acha. Very interesting words. In English, they translate Meleya, we know is full. So your fullness, but we're referring to an offering, vidim acha, and your truma, and we'll see in a minute, truma is the portion that we set aside for the kohen. Loi sa'acher, it literally you would translate, you should not delay. We'll see in Rashi, it means do not mix them up. In other words, bring them in the right order. We'll see what he means. Just want to read the end of the pasuk. Bechar banecha titen li, you shall, the firstborn of your sons, you shall present to me. It's really a few mitzvahs in one. It's very confusing. So let's first understand just the translation. Look into Rashi. What is Melei Ascha, your fullness offering? So Rashi says, Chayva hamuteles alecha, the obligation imposed upon you, what is that? Kishetismale tfu ascha lehisbasha, when your produce becomes full, meaning they're totally ripe. And what is this obligation? What do you have to do when your produce is ripe? These are the bikurim, we know the first fruits that we bring to Yerushalayim. Beautiful, you know, we always have that beautiful imagery of the basket and the first fruits, and that's what Melei Ascha is referring to. This is an offering, so now what we are, in our pasuk, we are actually, whether directly or indirectly, mentioning a few of the different things that we have to separate for whether the kohen, the levi, the poor person, or Hashem, however it is. Let's see what dim echat, interesting word, this word dim acha. What is this word? So dim acha, he says, Rashi just translates it as the truma. And Rashi says, v'eina yeidea malosh dema. I don't know what this word dema, why it's using this word for truma. It's a very interesting Rashi. I want to show you something on the bottom. Let's see what says, a beautiful thing. If you look, did I bracket yours on the bottom there, or? Beautiful.
Seven. Yes,
Excellent. So seven has a circle. So what I want to do is look by numbers. I'll tell you what. Look on the first column, the bottom line, Tosfos. I know I didn't. I would just start from reading there. He says, questions this interpretation, stating that the word dema is used to, in the Torah to mean truma, while the rule of nullification is rabbinic in origin. Let's see what. I want to see what he says over here. What is the word dema? So the he brings a lot of mefarshim, and he says, the word dima, do you see, a word usually translated as tears, can refer to anything that drips like tears, which means any liquid. Thus, truma may be offered in its liquid form. Okay, and then we says, because as we say, it says the first of your grain, your wine, and your olive oil, and they are called dema. But bikurim is not dema. Bikurim is meleya. Why? Because that is the fruit itself, not the wine or the oil. When you go up to the Beis HaMikdash on Shavuos, you know, you see those pictures, they couldn't decide that they're going to take the grapes and make it into wine and carry the wine. They have to actually take the grapes itself, the fruit itself. It's just a beautiful little thing to understand. Now let's understand the number seven I also highlighted. I want to show you, I'm thinking which one to do first, second. Let's do number seven and I'll show you the chart. I'll see a little bit about it and I'll show you something so beautiful from Rabbi Sacks. Let's see. Okay, the tithe. So he says, there are three tithes. So I'll tell you what you can do. If you, the other sheet that you had in front of you, you know, the ones that we were reading from, go to page number five of that booklet, because I have it open in front of you. In that booklet, Daisy. Yeah, go to page number five. Yeah, that booklet. Yeah, let's see. I'll show you here, because here it just has it very clearly. You know, in Torah, we have the concept of what we call truma and meiser. And Bikurim, it's a form of Truma actually. But so Bikurim, we know, are first fruits brought up to Yerushalayim, right? That's a beautiful mitzvah given to the Kohen. We have other forms of presents that we give both to the Kohen and to the Levi. Let's see quickly in number seven, it tells us, and I'll show you in the chart very quickly. So he says over here in number seven, the tithe, the tenth. So there are three tithes, right? There are three generally. There's something called Maiser Rishayin, which is separated from the crop. This is interesting. After the truma has been set aside, what's the truma? So let me just make clear, the truma is the first thing that you set aside. First thing is actually the bikurim. First bikurim. Okay, let's be clear. Then truma. Truma, the Torah does not give us a measurement. Truma, it's either 1/40th, 1/50th, or 1/60th, and it's a very small amount. That's a little bit of what you have, and that's for the kohen. Okay, that's truma. After you've taken the bikurim, and after you've taken the truma, there's another thing that you still have to separate, right? We have a lot of things that we have to do before we can actually eat our food. So what is the first one? The first one is the maaser rishon. It's separated from the crop and is given to a levi. And we know that this is a tenth, right? And this is done during all of the 6 years out of the seven-year cycle. The seventh year is Shemitah. So all the 6 years you do maaser rishon. Every year you take a tenth and you separate it and you give it to the, that's how the levi lives, we know. But then, and there's another obligation after all of that still. And that, depending on the year. So let's see what he says. Then there's something called Maaser Sheni. What's Maaser Sheni? So Maaser Sheni is separated from the crop and taken to Yerushalayim, where it is eaten by the owner and his guests. When is this done? So this is done only certain years. This is done the first and the second year of the Shemitah cycle, and the fourth and the fifth year, right, of the Shemitah cycle. You take that tenth, and you go up to Yerushalayim. It's a very beautiful mitzvah. This is not, you're not giving it to somebody, I mean, you might have guests as well, but this, we're not going to go into today the meaning that's in other places, but just a small thing, it says, what's the point of this mitzvah? I mean, why can't you eat it at home? You're going to eat it in Yerushalayim. The point is to encourage us to go to Yerushalayim. That's one of the things, because we need to constantly recharge ourselves spiritually, and when we go to Yerushalayim, we bring this incredible little bit of our food. That's what we start eating, and this also gives us that when we come back home, the rest that's left over sort of has a touch of that holiness. You know, you remember that, wow, I've taken some, I've eaten Yerushalayim, now I can enjoy the rest at home. So it already makes Yerushalayim part of not only Yerushalayim, but part of your daily life as well. So it's a very beautiful mitzvah. It also, I mean, again, everything has such incredible spiritual ramification, but also social. You understand that people see each other. It's such a beautiful thing in Yiddishkeit, hopefully avoiding a certain amount of isolation and loneliness of people. There's the connectedness that we have as a Jewish people. Hopefully when you go up, you see some family, you see people that you're, it's such a beautiful concept and it's such a magnificent mitzvah. It's not easy, but it's so beneficial. This is all part of the agricultural, you know, and the simple materialistic lives that we're living. Then comes the other one. What's the other meister? And the other meister is called Meister Ani. This one is done in the third and sixth year when we don't do Meister Sheni. And what do we do with this? This is another tenth that we say is separated on the third and the sixth year, and it's given to the poor. And we know during the year of Shemitah, no, obviously the land doesn't belong to us, so there are no tithes, right? Then there's nothing. So if you see, it says the proper order of separation, first Bikurim, then the Truma, then the first Meister that's given to the Levi every year, then the second Meister, which is the second and third year, and the second, third, the fourth, the fifth year, that's to go to Yerushalayim, and then after that is the Meister Ani, which the truth is the same. That's the same. Now, interesting, what it means after is because you realize every time you're taking a tenth, there's less of it left. So it's less that you're taking from. But we don't know why. And actually, it's interesting because one of the Mefarshim say that Kabbalistically, there are reasons. But the Torah wants us specifically to do it in this order. And this is what the Pasuk means. Loisa acher, don't delay. It doesn't mean don't delay. It means do it in this order. Don't mix up the order of the separation. Okay, so that's a very good question. Ooh, so I don't know these halachas, Leia, but there are very extensive halachas. And the truth is that some of it is shaykh today. In other words, what I mean by that is not the actual, in a sense, almost the obligation as far as... Yeah, no, I know. Some of it you do have to take off and you can't eat it in Eretz Yisrael, right? You know that there's a concept of... that's, well, not just Shemitah. It does correlate 100%. It's a beautiful, no, knowing from over, yeah, 100%, all leading up. But it's an interesting thing. No, nowadays, if you don't take Meiser from, so you can't eat that fruit. So even, like, if a person, I'll show you something interesting. If you look at these sheets number 5, this is, I think, for today, it says a very interesting thing. So if something is grown in Eretz Yisrael, so we still have a certain obligation of taking Truma and Meiser. And if you don't, it's called Tevel. You can't actually benefit from it. So there's a certain way that we do it. And I don't know all these halachas, but I'll just give you one example. It says like this. Look at, so you see how the chart has in our times? Do you see every one of them? So look at, let's say Truma Gedayla. That's the one that you just give to the Kayin. So he says, any amount not given to anyone, forbidden to all. You are supposed to take a drop off for the Kayin. We do, let's say, challah now, right? But this is not just challah. This is an Eretz Yisrael from the fruits. You're supposed to take a little bit of truma and just discard it, to get rid of it. I don't know that means every individual person. It could be that the farmer does it. You understand, Leah? So that's why we buy from a store that you know that's right, keeps it. So you, if you don't, you have to do it yourself. You have to be careful with that. Okay. Then let's say for Meiser Rishon, you see how it says, in our times, separate one tenth, but a very interesting thing. So this one, after separation of the Trumas Meiser, then it says, no holiness and permitted to anyone. It's a very interesting thing, which means, you see that's on the bottom. That one means that you just decide in your mind, you know, I'm separating, but once you've done the separation, then it doesn't matter anymore. Then you can eat it. It's like very interesting, because some of it retains holiness, some of it doesn't nowadays. And we really can't give it really to the Kohen and the Levi nowadays. That's not how it works. So it's just a matter if we have to discard, or are we permitted, once we've separated, to actually benefit from it. And depending on which one, you see it says it in here, that you can do like Trumas Meiser, which is an interesting one. That's a fascinating one that we didn't mention. This is such a beautiful, also beautiful concept. Do you know that the Levi also has to take Truma? You know, this is a very beautiful thing. A lot of times, in life, you know, we think if we're the recipient, Nebuch, let's say a person's on welfare, so he doesn't have to give tzedakah. That's not how Torah looks at it. Even if you're a receiver, you still take off. And that's a very beautiful thing, because it makes everybody into a giver and a receiver. It's quite a fascinating thing. So even the Levi gives the Kohen. Do you see that? A very beautiful, from his Meiser.
The Trumas Meiser is just pertaining to the Levi.
The Levi, exactly. Exactly right, Chana. It's a very fascinating. So anyways, nowadays, nothing can be done with it. So if somebody, it wouldn't really even happen, because the Levi won't have, but it doesn't matter. The point is, if technically he would have it, he wouldn't be able to. But if you see Meiser Sheni, so again, one tenth not given to anyone after redeemed, then permitted to all. And then he goes on to Meiser Ani, the poor. Again, one tenth given to the poor. It's very interesting. No attached, holiness, and permitted to all, which means, in a sense, we should. So now we know that Ma'aser Ani, the truth is, we do try to keep now. This is with our money, with our income, right? Every person is obligated in Torah to take a tenth and give it away to tzedakah. And the truth is, what does it mean, permitted to all? So if you would do with money, it's not a problem. You just give money. But sometimes if you think of, let's say, a fruit in Eretz Yisrael, what happens if the person is impure? So here it doesn't matter. Impure, pure has nothing to do with this. Everybody, every poor person, so to speak, can, you know, just enjoy it. It's fine.
Even if you have a tree, you have it in your garden. You have that.
Okay, so I know in Eretz Yisrael, yeah, it's I don't know. I have to, I don't, again, like I said, I don't know these halachas, but you'd have to.
No, in Israel.
Yeah, in Israel.
Even if you have a tree, some people have a tree. Like, mm. Tree only.
There is definitely some kind of trumas and maestros. Yeah, yeah, there is. It's an interesting one. I don't know. You have to ask these questions.
You have to take something
and discard it. Yeah, it's very interesting.
And you cannot give it to even to non-Jews.
It doesn't sound like it because it has a certain holiness. So no, it's a very hard thing to know. I don't know these halachas. I'm sorry, I don't know. Yeah. Okay, I want to just show you something beautiful and we'll finish with it. Go to the next page, number 7. Show you something magnificent. Please, this you should take home, this part. Take it out of your booklet. This is so beautiful. So I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I can tell you because he just writes beautifully. But this is, he calls it the gift of giving. So he wrote it on Truma and the Parsha Truma, which is with mentioning Truma here, but he says like this, that what's the idea of making a home for Hashem? The whole Parshas Truma is about the Mishkan, and also the fact that we think we're going to live in Eretz Yisrael and, you know, separate certain amounts and give it to God. And what does this mean? So he says a very beautiful thing. He says, first of all, that Hashem doesn't live in buildings, as we know. He lives in builders. Okay, a very beautiful terminology. He says he lives not in structure of stone, but in the human heart. Okay, so I want to show you, if you go to page number 8. So if that's the case, why does Hashem tell us to make a Mishkan? So he says the answer given by most is that Hashem gave the command specifically after the sin of the golden calf. What happened by the golden calf? So we know what happened at the golden calf. At the golden calf, Moshe Rabbeinu was on the mountain, and the people knew that Moshe Rabbeinu had communicated with Hashem, and they felt that Hashem was accessible. But when Moshe was gone for nearly 6 weeks, they panicked, as we know. And they thought, who's going to help us to communicate between us and Hashem? So they decided that they had to make this golden calf. So then Hashem said, no, obviously that's not the right way. So when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain, what does Hashem say? That's why Hashem said to Moshe, see the third paragraph, let them build me a sanctuary, and I may dwell among them. And we know, what is the word for Mishkan? The Shoyrish is Shin Chaf Nun, right? Shachain, which means, as we know, is to dwell. Interesting, it says, he says that, he points out that before this place in Chumash, we never used this word in connection to Hashem, but now we use it a lot, the Shechina. We call the Shechina, that's the name for Hashem. That's where Hashem rests. So what does it mean? The idea is closeness. Shachain means a neighbor. Like a, right? It's very beautiful. So he says, the person who lives next door. So what do we want? We want Hashem as our next door neighbor. That's what we want, okay? And then he says, that's what the Avos had, we know. They all had that, that they felt. And that's, and Hashem really sort of, he communicated with them like as close as a neighbor. He came to Yaakov, don't be afraid. Always, you know, all the things. He says, that's not what they had experienced, because the Yidden themselves had seen God in a different light. He had done so many punishments, hurt the Egyptians. So they saw God in a way almost like more of a fearsome, you know, if you want to say, king that you're afraid of. So what do we say? He says like this. So for Hashem to be accessible, not just to the pioneers of faith, what we want, to every member, was a challenge. So what does he have to do? He has to contract himself. And I want to show you something. Now come to number 9, because we're going to come to where we're coming now. Okay, so it's not so easy, though. It's easy for Hashem to condense himself, as we might say, but how are we going to feel the presence of Hashem? So he says a very beautiful thing. Okay. Second paragraph. How do you feel the presence of Hashem in the midst of everyday life? Not from the top of Mount Sinai, but from the plain beneath, right? How? So that is the life-transforming secret of the name of the Parsha Truma. It means a contribution. So that's what we're talking about here. The contribution you give to the Kohen, to the Levi, to the poor person. What's a contribution? Hashem says to Moshe, tell the Israelites to take from me a contribution. You are to receive the contribution for me from everyone whose heart prompts them to give. The best ways of encountering Hashem is to give. The very act of giving flows from, or leads to, the understanding that what we give is part of what we were given. It is a way of giving thanks, an act of gratitude. That is the difference in the human mind between the presence of Hashem and the absence of Hashem. If Hashem is present, it means that we have what we have is His. He created the universe, He made us, He gave us life, He breathed into us the very air we breathe. All around us is the majesty, the plenitude of God's generosity, the light of the sun, the gold of the stone, the green of the leaves. Imagine Him saying it would be, you know, He speaks so beautifully. The song of the birds. This is what we feel reading the great creation psalms we read every day in the morning service. The world is Hashem's art gallery, and His masterpieces are everywhere. When life is a given, you acknowledge this by giving back. But if life is not a given, in other words, if that's your attitude, because there's no giver, if the universe came into existence only because of a random fluctuation in the quantum field, if there's nothing in the universe that knows we exist, if there is nothing to the human body but a string of letters in the genetic code, and to the human mind but electrical impulses in the brain, if our moral convictions are self-serving means of self-preservation, and our spiritual aspirations mere delusions, then it is difficult to feel gratitude for the gift of life. There is no gift if there is no giver. There is only a series of meaningless accidents, and it is difficult to feel gratitude for an accident. And that's why, page number 10, the Torah therefore tells us something simple and practical. Give, and you will come to see life as a gift. You don't need to be able to prove God exists. All you need is to be thankful that you exist, and the rest will follow. And that is how Hashem came to be close to the Israelites through the building of the sanctuary. It wasn't the quality of the wood, the metals, and the drapes. It wasn't the glitter of the jewels on the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. It wasn't the beauty of the architecture or the smell of the sacrifices. It was the fact that it was built out of the gifts of everyone whose heart prompts him to give. Where people give voluntarily to one another and to holy causes, that is where the divine presence rests. Hence the special word that it gives its name to this week's parsha, Truma. I've translated it as a contribution, but it actually has a subtly different meaning for which there is no simple English equivalent. It means something you lift up, right? L'raimeim, Truma. It's a very beautiful thing. How do you lift it? By dedicating it to a sacred cause. You lift it up, then it lifts you up. The best way of scaling the spiritual heights is simply to give in gratitude for the fact that you have been given. God doesn't live in a house of stone. He lives in the hearts of those who give. And this, again, such a beautiful, he just says it so beautifully, but it's a beautiful thing, a very simple thing, this mitzvah here and the little thing, the order. Why is it so important? Which order? But just shows us that the giving is so important that you actually have to pay attention. You actually have to do it with intent, with the proper intention, with the proper thought process going through it. Not just like, you know, on the back of your hand, okay, you know, like you mindlessly. This has to be done mindfully, because this is, as he says, what makes Hashem real to us. So that's a powerful thing, as we can see. Why? Maybe that's why it's connected to the pasuk before. A person who values, so to speak, Hashem and the judge and the spiritual leaders, they are the ones, interestingly, who will be able to give. Because it's by giving that you make Hashem the reality. And when Hashem is the reality, obviously, you're not going to curse, or you're not going to not accept what Hashem does. And not only that, but you're full of gratitude. He's always giving you. So what do you have to say negative? What's the negative? Everything is, you know, it's not like you've, so to speak, it's not that you expect it. It's not that you deserve it. It's just a gift. It's a very beautiful attitude. So we'll just conclude here. And in Birch Hashem, next week we'll continue with more of the mitzvahs. So, yeah. But I do want the rest of the booklet back, because I need it for next week. But if you want to take this, you can. Do it. You can take out this. Take out the, yeah. It's so beautiful. Yes, please. You can. I'll restaple it. Don't worry.
It's a book,
I know, it's so beautiful. He's very gifted. I was wondering if I have it in the library. I'm not sure.
Oh,
I'm not sure. I know, it's just that then I don't have it. There was an older one. I have to get. Yes. Yes, please do. It's so beautiful. Please take it. Yes.
Sorry,
yeah, don't worry.
Here.
Oh, yeah. So, you know what? You could kind of take it. Maybe you'll bring it back.
But I just actually want to take it.
Yeah, take it. You know, you can bring it back next week. It doesn't matter. I need the rest of it for next week. You take this. Please do. Yes.
So,
thank you.
Robertson, if the judges and the camera, why on a Beth Din is it not just one judge? Why are there
three? Because you know we're going to get to that next week. Because it has to do with the majorities. You need to have more than one. It can't be two. Because one will just say one thing, one say the other. So you need a third to. Yeah.
I mean, like here in the civil courts, okay, there's one judge, but there is a jury.
The jury.
But in Athens, so if the one person with one, and I gather the cursing, I mean, not that I'm being judgmental, there's only one person that we tend to curse, so I did my cancellation.
Oh, yeah.
They said his name.
Yeah, of course, yeah, Maxima, of course.
And that was like a curse, and because that was really like a curse. But yeah, it'd be, so that'll be interesting next week.
So tomorrow Levical will give the shear, and then he'll be back for the Thursday.
No, not actually. Max could ask that. He's got an interesting question to ask.
About tomorrow.
But no. He'll ask.
Okay.
Trust me.
Okay.
Thank you.
It's so good to see you.
Thank you, Lisa. I think that's wonderful. I can't believe it.
No, neither can I. She's the little one. I know she's 21, but she was, I know. Now we just stay the same age, that's all.
And your other one is
Shayla's almost 14. I really can't believe.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. And they're living in America?
I think so. He's a New Yorker, so I think so. Yeah.
It's hard, but you know.
Yeah. It is.
21.
Yeah. She was just. I know.
They all grow up. So, when is the wedding?
Before Yom Kippur, it's Yud Tesela, which is 19th of September. So it's soon.
Very exciting. So it'll be a busy time for you.
It will be a busy time. But then it'll be good. We'll get to Yom Kippur and then all back to, it's good.
Lovely.
But how is your Sunday live here? You're the one that just
they
come
do, out? They do, but they're in Italy at the moment.
Very nice.
So,
wow. Beautiful.
They want to spend some time away, so that's fine.
Wow. They'll be back soon.
Yes.
That's what happens. I know. Oh, thank you, guys. Help me with my
best.
Order out of the chaos. That's what I want to know. Oh, Lisa, thanks. Leah, have a wonderful day. Yes, I'll see you. Yeah.
The holidays are too long.
Thank you, Hannah. I know, it's a bit complicated. Where is it? Somewhere in the booklet? Yeah, you can take it. Yeah, I don't need that anymore. Yeah, I know, I feel bad. I need the end of it. I'm very complicated. Yeah, don't worry, those we don't need anymore, so I'll put them. Don't worry. Yeah.
Hang on. Oh, that's separate.
Yeah. Yeah, that one's its own.
Hang on. Yeah, I'm just putting it in the different arms. Oh, yes, I wanted to ask you from Nadia Andi, which says that you fear. It's not scared.
So
it's an understanding of the greatness, but you're not scared of it. It protects you.
Exactly. Okay. I know it's a funny word, that fear. It's not funny, the right translation. You're kind of, thank you. Yes,
that's,
I know. Nice. Yes, Rachel's Tachma Yuras
Hashem. And my sister-in-law told me they don't do the next part.
No, I know. We don't have it in our
But it is there.
It's all part of Tyre, you know, these are spoken from different parts of
the... Yes, so that's quite... But it's not in the city.
We don't say it
every day. It's important.
There you go. That's why you say it.
It's like... It gives you that food for the day.
Right.
The spirit, and it's just wonderful what we're doing. Thank you very much.
I'm so amazed by how much there is.
Well, you're doing it.
Not
you rub it.
No.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Just, thank you.
Yeah, have a good day.
You too. Yeah, good. Oh, I managed.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible.
Look at the
home
again, but then you start to see all the
What?
The lawn and everything.